Good morning. We're going to be continuing today our shiur on Shemitah. We're still in the introduction, but we're going to be speaking about a lot of key explanations that will help us understand the mitzvah of Shemitah later on. There are in the Torah certain positive commandments and certain negative commandments, which are prohibitions, which the Torah tells us things that we are allowed to do and things that we are not allowed to do on the Shemitah. One of the positive commandments is, the Torah says, we have to let the land rest. And the Torah says it says that the land has got to be given a Sabbath to Hashem. So that's a positive commandment. We need to let land rest. Another positive commandment is Hefka. We are supposed to do an act which is called Hefka, which means that we are actually saying that everything that we own in the land, all the fruits that we own in the land, they don't belong to us anymore. Anyone who wants them can take them. That is called Hefker, which means anyone can pick them up. They belong to everyone else, which is, in a sense, the communist system. Now, very important to specify, a lot of people make this mistake. What the Torah says is that only the fruit and only the agricultural produce is Hefka, not the land, nor the trees. Now, why is that a problem? Every single year, we have this problem on Sukkot. People don't know the halacha, they think that the trees are also Hefka. They go into an orchard, they cut the trees down, take the branches for schach, and then when you say to them, you're not allowed to take them, but they say, but excuse me, it's Shemitah, it's Hefka. Now, what's the point? They've just now stolen. Okay, they've stolen the trees. It's a sukkah gzula, a stolen sukkah. All the brachas that they made for the 7 days are brachot levatala. Another isur d'oraisa, drabonon, machloket, rambam, and toisvus, if it's an isur drabonon d'oraisa for the blessings that they made in vain. They didn't commit the mitzvah of sukkah, because you can't commit the mitzvah in a stolen sukkah. Imagine if someone walks into your private garden and you see him holding a chainsaw. Excuse me, what are you doing here, sir? Oh, I've come to cut down your olive tree. I like it. I want to put it in my garden. Excuse me? The olive tree is not Hefka. What's Hefka are the olives. There is an interesting shaila which the Poskim asked. What happens? Imagine, this is a story that was given by Reb Yitzchak Zilberstein. Reb Yitzchak Zilberstein asked the shaila, imagine I have an esrog orchard in my garden, and you come in and I say to you, listen, halachically, you're not allowed to take the fruit. You're not allowed to take any part of the wood. Well, you know the end, the oketz, the part that grows at the end of the esrog? You can't take that. You can take only the esrog. You can't touch the tree. Now, what's the problem? That part at the bottom, the oketz, if it doesn't exist on the esrog is possible. What? I'm not talking about the pitum. The pitum in most esrogim, the pitum is actually part of the flesh of the esrog. I'm talking about the bottom part. Okay? What? The esrog is combined.
Like that's attached to the
okay, stem. We're going to use this for the typing. The stem. Oh, thank you for the word. The stem. Reb Yitzchak Zilberstein asks, what happens if you come into my garden and I say, listen, halachically, only the fruit is hefka. You can take the esrog, you're not allowed to take the stem. Pluck the esrog off without the stem. Big problem. Why? An esrog without a stem is possible for the first day. Am I allowed to say that? And he brings certain poskim that say that, yes, I am allowed to say that. You want my esrog, you can only take the esrog, no stem. It's a big machlokes, but I'm just that we understand how careful we've got to be on Shemitah. Now, another example. Someone came and asked me last Shemitah. He went in to an orchard and he picked oranges. Now, how did he pick oranges? It was a bit difficult for him to pick each orange on its own. There was a branch which had in it about 6 or 7 oranges, and he just took the branch down and he yanked it down. Pardon me, ripped it off the tree, and then he was holding a branch with 7 oranges. And I said to him, you just now did an issur d'oraisa of stealing. You're a gazlan. You're not allowed to touch the tree. You can only touch the oranges. You can take the orange carefully and pluck the orange off. You're not allowed to pluck off the leaves. The leaves are not yours. The branches are not yours. No, you're allowed to physically touch it. You're not allowed to destroy it. It's not yours. You're only allowed to take the produce. Another thing, the land is not yours also. I can't walk into your field or into your orchard on the year of Shemitah and say, this looks like a nice place. I think I'm going to be living here for the next year. It's my land. It's not your land. So the only thing that's hefka or the fruit is the agricultural produce. Nothing else. Another positive commandment is the commandment of Shemitah, which means Torah tells us, stop doing agricultural work in the fields. Now we're going to learn there are certain things you are allowed to do and not to do. For those who have a book, I am on page 28. Good. Now there are certain prohibitions that the Torah tells us that we aren't allowed to do. Now, we have to be very clear on noticing what these prohibitions are written on. Because if you'll notice, the Torah only speaks about certain agricultural things that we do in the field concerning to certain things, like, for example, olives, grapes, and wheat. Now, why is that important? Because there is a big debate among our sages what happens with other things, for example, apples. Plucking apples off a tree, is that something that's forbidden from the Torah or something that our sages forbade? Now, why is that important to know? As we're going to see, today in our time, Shemitah is not held as a commandment from the Torah. It is held as a commandment from our sages. And since it is from our sages and not from the Torah, it has gone down a level. And there are many things that we do allow the farmers to do in their fields, since Shemitah is not from the Torah. Currently, we're hoping Bezos Hashem that today Mashiach will come and Am Yisrael will all move to Eretz Yisrael, and Bezos Hashem, everything will change and will become Doraisa. But for the time being, it's Drabonon. So, one of the commandments the Torah says that we're not allowed to sow. The Torah says you may not sow your fields. Then the Torah says, nor prune your vineyards. Now, notice fields, vineyards. Then the Torah says, do not harvest crops that grow on their own. Harvesting is something that exists not in orchards. In orchards, notice, what did the Torah say when the Torah speaks about orchards? The Torah says, do not pick grapes of your unpruned vines. The Torah spoke about fields in general, but when the Torah spoke about orchards, about fruits, it only spoke about what? Only about grapes and vines. So therefore, many of our sages say that the Torah has limited its prohibitions only to fields and to grapes. And other things go down the level. Continues, there are other additional commandments the Torah tells us. One of them is we're not allowed to deal in commerce with fruits or agricultural produce that has got on it the holiness of Shavuos. The Gemara learns it in Tractate Avodah Zorah on the 62nd page, second side. And the Torah says, since it says le'ochla, you're only allowed to eat the agricultural produce, you're not allowed to make profit out of it. Which means, if you came into my orchard, or even my orchard on Shavuos, I am not allowed to take, as I did on regular years, where I filled a basket full of oranges, took them to the market, and sold them to anyone who wanted to buy them. You're not allowed to do that with fruit on Shavuos that have the holiness of Shavuot on it. Why? Because this is not sanctifying the Peiros of Shavuos. Many things that have a holiness to them, for example, korbanot, sacrifices, the bechor, we know that from the Torah, we are supposed to give the firstborn animal as a gift to the Kohen. You're not allowed to use that firstborn and to deal with it in a way that is disrespectful. Selling something like selling something as in regular standard commerce is disrespecting it. So the Torah says you are not allowed to have any commerce in fruits that have gotten them the holiness of Shavuos. Here comes the biggest problem. The Gemara also says you are not allowed to destroy the produce. Now, destroying the produce is a very large concept, and we're going to be seeing it in the halachas, because it doesn't mean only taking the produce and burning it up. What it means is you're not allowed to do with the fruit anything that is not considered to be a regular use during the years. And I'm going to give an example. 20 years ago, most poskim held that the oranges that had on them the holiness of Shavuos, you are not allowed to squeeze them and make orange juice from them. Why? Because 20 years ago, it was not that common for people to drink orange juice. What did people mostly do with oranges, at least here in Eretz Yisrael? They ate them as fruit. Very few people had orange squeezers, and you didn't find in shops the way you do today, orange juice on the shelves. Who drank orange juice 20 years ago? People who were sick, who had a cold, and people who did it for health reasons. They were a minority. Since they were a minority, and the majority of Am Yisrael did not drink orange juice on the whole, 20 years ago the poskim said, you're not allowed to squeeze oranges that have on them the holiness of Shavuos. Today, the poskim will all say, you are allowed to squeeze oranges. Why? Because orange juice has become a very common thing. Many people today have got orange squeezers at home. You can find on every corner, on every street, places that sell fresh orange juice. In America, someone says that 50 years ago, so in America, in Eretz Yisrael, it wasn't that common drinking orange juice. What? Maybe. There were kioskim that were selling them, but you could not get orange juice on the whole as in the supermarkets. Today, you can get 5-6 different makes. 20 years ago, who drank orange juice? I never remember myself ever drinking orange juice unless I was sick and my mother gave it to me for vitamin C, which is, by the way, another bluff, because oranges do not have that much vitamin C in them. But again, it's their fruit. Kiwi, for example, has got about 4 or 5 times more vitamin C than orange juice. But it's part of what's called merchandising, just like they always sold us that spinach has got in it a lot of iron. Remember Popeye? Well, spinach doesn't have in it a lot of iron. Broccoli has got about 6 or 7 times more iron than spinach, but what can we do? The growers of broccoli were not as powerful as the spinach growers in that time, so spinach was sold as the fruit that makes you strong. And so on and so on. But we are not allowed to do anything with an agricultural produce that has on it the holiness of Shavuos. We're not allowed to do with it something which is not the standard use. For example, a cucumber that is holy, that has got Shavuos holiness on it, am I allowed to cook it? No. Why? Barely no one eats cooked cucumbers. No. You are allowed to make pickled cucumbers, because that is a common thing. You're not allowed to cook a cucumber. Another example, a potato that is holy with the holiness of Shavuos. Am I allowed to eat it raw? Answer, what?
Russia,
only in Russia. Okay, maybe in Russia then the answer will be that you are allowed to eat it raw. But here in Eretz Yisrael, you're not allowed to eat a raw potato, because that is not the common way to eat it. Now notice how difficult this becomes, because that means that in every single thing, the poskim have not only got to be well-versed in halacha, they've also got to be well-versed in the culinary customs of every single country, knowing what is common and what isn't common in certain places. Now that's why many times you'll find that on Shavuos, there are differences between poskim in America and poskim in Eretz Yisrael. An example, one of the big differences 20 years ago was concerning pomegranates that handled them, Kedushas Shavuos, the holiness of Shavuos. In America, drinking pomegranate juice was more common. Many pomegranates were used for making out of them drinks. It was considered to be a health fruit, and especially since the pomegranate is considered to be, what do they call it today? A superfruit, one of the healthiest fruits, so they say. In Eretz Yisrael, who drank pomegranate juice? We had pomegranates once a year, and that was only on Rosh Hashanah for the simonim. Other than that, you didn't see pomegranates in the market whatsoever. Today, you walk in any market, and you'll see pomegranates all over the year. So, things change from country to country. Another thing that the Torah tells us, which is another commandment, is the commandment of Biur. What is Biur? We will be learning that as we continue. A stage comes in the 8th year, not in this year, in 5775, it will be in 5776, where eventually, when the agricultural produce, with the holiness of Shavuos, stops existing in the fields, it's now time for new produce, we are supposed to get rid of whatever we have left at home that has on it the holiness of Shavuos. It's called Biur. Now, there is a big debate, how does one do it? Do I actually literally have to destroy what I have in the house? Or do I just have to do a hefka? I take it out, and I say, anyone who wants to take it can take it. This is now for anyone. And then if no one's around, I snatch it back for myself. And that's why the poskim say, no, no. You're laughing about that, but let me give an example. Imagine if I am now a grocery. Imagine if I bought, 10 boxes of grape juice that has gone in Kedushas Shavuos. Now, each bottle of grape juice, let's say we'll take the cheapest wine, is 10 shekel. Each box has in it 12. I had 12 bottles, 120 shekel. If I have 10 boxes, that's 1,200 shekel. Now, if I just put 1,200 shekel out in the street, and I can say to myself, okay, anyone else that can take it, please come to me. I need to speak to you because I need your money for lots and lots of tzedakah purposes. Most of us cannot afford taking 1,200 shekel and just putting it out in the street and saying, anyone who wants to take it, free for the taking. So, the poskim say, we'll give you a good solution. Go to 3 of your good friends, people that you know. Do the hefka in front of them. Trust them. No one will take the grape juice, and then you can take it back. Now that is dangerous. Why is that dangerous? About 10 years ago, there was a story in Bnei Brak where someone who had an apartment, he wanted to do the mitzvah of shiluach haken. He had a nest of pigeons in his house, and part of the mitzvah is it's got to be in a place which is hefka. So he called 3 of his friends, and these are people who learned in one of the most choshev kollelim in Bnei Brak. And he called 3 of his friends, and in front of them he said, I would like to be mafkir my house. The minute he said that, one of his friends took out a nail, took out a hammer, bashed it in the wall and says, your house is hefka, I just now won your house, now your house is mine. Wow. Please clear it out, you have a week to leave. This story got to Reb Nissim Karelitz. Reb Nissim Karelitz Shlita, no, this is not a joke, Reb Nissim Karelitz Shlita said that indeed, the person who put in the nail is correct. The house was hefker. But he said to him, if you do not return your house, the house to your friends, I promise you, you will not live out the rest of the year. He refused to listen to him. He died that year. It was a terrible story, and all of Nevrak, it was published. It was really an awful story. So when you do hefker, make sure that there are three really good friends that have a good financial standing and stability, and they're not going to snatch your grape juice from you, and you can trust them. Okay, so just make sure, be careful with who you pick out your friends in front of who you do the hefker, because friends, everything is fine until you get to the issue of money. When money comes, friendships tend to dissipate. Okay, some other things that our sages have told us that we are supposed to do. Oh, another mitzvah that we have is the mitzvah of Shmitat Ksafim. We have also a mitzvah of not only letting the land rest, but we have a mitzvah of any debt that we are supposed to collect in the year of Shmita, we're supposed to let it go. You're off the hook. Now, notice the system here, because we have to understand the system. This is a wonderful social system which is built in order to allow me to give you a donation in a respectful way. Halachically, Shmita will only annul a debt if the payment is in the Shmita year. Now, what's the easiest way of avoiding that? It's very simple. Instead of telling you to pay me 2 months before Shmita ends, I just tell you to pay me a month after Shmita ended. Which means, once you've got to pay me in the eighth year, the Shmita doesn't annul the debt anymore. So if I have told you that your debt ends 2 months before Shmita ends, on Rosh Chodesh Av of this year, unless I'm an idiot or an ignoramus, and I don't know the halacha, the Torah's logic is, I know exactly the halacha, that the Shmita will annul your debt, but I want to give you a sum of money in a respectful way. I don't want to give it to you in a sense of a donation to embarrass you. I'm going to lend you the money, and I'm going to make sure that the payment is in the Shemitah year. And then when it comes, I'm going to say, ugh, gewalt, I forgot to do the mechanism which we're going to speak about to allow me to collect the debt. Ugh, what a pity. Well, I'm sorry, you're off the hook. You don't have to pay me. And you go, yes. So it's a wonderful system of allowing me to loan you money without embarrassing you. But that's another commandment of letting off the debts. Now, in most cases, this barely happens, because if you take a debt which is for 8 to 10 years and the payment is a year, 2 years after Shemitah, Shemitah doesn't affect it whatsoever. So it's in very, very rare cases. We'll speak about how also to avoid that problem. Now, where is the commandment of Shemitah in? The commandment of Shemitah is upheld not only in Eretz Yisrael, but also in the neighboring lands of Syria, part of Jordan, part of what is today considered Eretz Yisrael. Once upon a time it was part of Jordan, which is across the Jordan River. Now, why is that so? One of the reasons is because when David HaMelech came and conquered the land of Eretz Yisrael, he didn't only conquer Eretz Yisrael, he also conquered part of Syria and the surroundings. Now, why is that important? According to many of the Rishonim, many of our former sages, Eretz Yisrael's borders are much greater than what they are today. Now, where does this have a halachic ramification? The great Gaon and Tzaddik, Mordechai Eliyahu Zecher Tzaddik Livracha, was asked at a time, on Tu Bishvat, there is a big Indian of having fruit only from Eretz Yisrael. Most dried fruit, where do they come from? Turkey. So he was asked, can I buy dried fruit from Turkey, even though I want to be makbid on having fruit from Eretz Yisrael? And his answer was yes, because according to most sages, Turkey is part of Eretz Yisrael. And when Mashiach comes, Turkey is going to be Eretz Yisrael. So taking dried fruit from Turkey is taking from Eretz, which means Erdogan, who is an impudent, okay, and disrespectful Arab, is eventually going to be kicked out of there, dealt with the way he should be dealt with, and Turkey is going to become part of an Israeli suburb. Okay, we'll have a place to put there all the Jews. It's not just Turkey. Eretz Yisrael, according to many of the sages, continues also into Jordan, into part of Saudi Arabia. It all depends on the limits. Eretz Yisrael is supposed to be quite big, according to some of our sages. So halachically, Shemitah exists also in Syria. Now, it's not that practical for us, because as far as I know, Syrians, they're not many Jews, if at all, that live in Syria. Not at all. What live in Syria are murderous groups of Daesh, Bashar Assad, another big murderer, who, by the way, would like to wish both of the sides great hatzlocha in what they're doing. They're doing a wonderful job, and would like them to continue what they're doing. May they prosper. May they have longevity to finish. And when they finish doing what they're doing, may they deal with each other the way they dealt with their enemies. Baruch Hashem. Hashem is allowing us. This is what the Torah says. Hashem yilachem lachem. Hashem shall fight for you, v'atem tacharishun, and you shall be silent. Let them do the dirty job for you. Now, in Syria today, no one lives. We can't grow anything there because they're never going to allow us to go in there. So it's not a practical halacha. It was a practical halacha in previous times where there was a relationship of peace between Syria and Eretz Yisrael, and Jews lived on the outer skirts of Syria, and they used to grow their agricultural produce. But today, it only exists as an Eretz Yisrael. Now, there's a big debate among Poskim, where do the borders of Eretz Yisrael end? Mostly down south. What is the line exactly in which Eretz Yisrael ends? Now that is a big machloikis among all the different abonim, and it affects where we take agricultural produce from. For example, one of the most prosperous areas where a lot of agricultural produce is taken from is an area near the kibbutz of Ein Yahav. They are very good lands there. Ein Yahav, there is a big dispute among our sages, is that part of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore you can't take agricultural produce from there and say that it doesn't have any kedushas shavis on it. Or is it not part of Eretz Yisrael, and that's what the Badat Zadeh, the Haredis holds, for example, and sometimes we get produce coming from Kibbutz Ein Yahav. So, it's a machlokes. For example, what? The Eid HaVedi says it's not part of Eretz Yisrael. And that's why, even though they try to take only from Jordan and from Gaza, in cases of need, they will take also from Ein Yahav. Now, that's a problem for most Sfardi Poskim. Most Sfardi Poskim hold that Ein Yahav is part of Eretz Yisrael, which means that if you buy agricultural produce from there, you have to hold it under Kedusha Shvis, and we'll learn what the halachic ramifications are. Now, when did Shemitah begin? Shemitah began, there's a wonderful system of finding out what year is the Shemitah, and that system is dividing the Jewish year by 7. If you, for example, take the year that we're at, 5775, how much is 5775 divided by 7? Please, most of you have here cell phones and you can do it on your calculator. 825, a full number. Whenever the number of the years is divided by 7, it turns out to be a full number, that's the year of Shemitah. Now, that's not the way that's not the way it was supposed to be from the beginning of the world, it's just the way it works out, of course, thanks to divine Hashgacha. Shemitah started when Am Yisrael came into the land of Israel, led by Yehoshua bin Nun. For the first 14 years, they were fighting and conquering the land from all the nations that were living here. Why did they? And they did not uphold Shemitah in those 14 years. Why? Because the Torah says that you have got to wait till Am Yisrael is sitting, each one is sitting under his vines and in his fields. And the interpretation was, we have to wait till we conquer the lands and everyone is sitting in his private territory. Only after 14 years, when they finished the conquering of the land, did they then start counting the 7-year cycle, which means only on the 21st year after they conquered the land of Eretz Yisrael, was the first Shemitah that was kept. And of course, thanks to divine Hashgacha, it works out that fast, it's a very easy system of working it out. Take a number, we take the number of years divided by 7. When it reaches a full number, with nothing left, nothing after the dot, that's the year of Shemitah. 5775 divides exactly by 7, works out to be 825.
When you say the land, you mean the tribal land, right?
I'm talking about the tribal lands, yes. Another commandment, which is also affects Shemitah, unfortunately we cannot upkeep it yet, is the mitzvah of Yovel. Shemitah, notice the number of 7 is a very, very special number in Yiddishkeit. It keeps returning again and again, because the Maharal of Prague says 7 is the perfection of nature. The world was created in 6 days, and the 7th year with the Sabbath. That's why our week is combined of 7 days. There was a time where the Chinese tried to change it to a 10-day week. They failed. Didn't work out. The world continues keeping a 7-day cycle. Let's continue. 7 days in Yiddishkeit. How many days do we have when a person gets married of Simcha? The 7 days. When someone dies, Lehavdil, how many days do we mourn him? For 7 days. Shemitah is every 7 years. Every 7 cycles of Shemitah, there is another special year called Yovel. Yovel is the 50th year. And the 50th year is also a year of Shemitah, which we uphold the mitzvahs of Shemitah. In the time of the Torah, immediately after the 49th year, which was a Shemitah, there was another year of Yovel. There were 2 years of Shemitah one after the other. Today, why don't we uphold Yovel? Because the Torah tells us that Yovel is dependent on where the majority of the population of Am Yisrael is dwelling. Unfortunately, today, most of Am Yisrael is not in Eretz Yisrael, but we are at a very crucial standpoint that it's possible that by the next Shemitah, we will be keeping Yovel from Doraisa. Why? In Eretz Yisrael, currently, are living a bit more than 6 million Jews. The next largest Jewish population in the world is America. In America, live 5 plus million Jews. And in Europe, there are about between 3 to 4 million Jews. Europe, and I'm also talking about South America and other places. Now, the numbers are very close. We're talking about between 13 to 14 million Jews, which means 7 million, 7.5 million is the midpoint. If we have here 1 more million Jews, if in the next 7 years, Bezrat Hashem, more than 1 million Jews will make Aliyah, the majority of Jews are living in Eretz Yisrael. And then, Yovel will be kept from the Oraisa, from the Torah, and everything is going to change. Because once the majority of the Jews live on Eretz Yisrael, the Midrash says that is the beginning of the footsteps of Mashiach coming speedily. May he come already today. So as we can see, this is a very crucial standpoint. The halachas might completely change in the next 7 years that we speak. And Bezos Hashem, instead of hearing the shiur from me, you'll be hearing the shiur from one of the rabbonim that Mashiach appoints to teach you the halachas of Shemitah. Now, we have reached now that...
What?
Oh, no, no, no. I will have a lot to learn when Mashiach comes, so I'll be one of the students.
When
the majority of Am Yisrael come, don't worry, there will be a Sanhedrin, there will be a Beis Din, and they will tell us when Yovel is. It won't be a problem. There will be a special calendar called Mashiach's calendar. Thank you very much. We've reached the end of the Shia. Be'ezras Hashem, next week we'll meet again and continue learning Hilchos Shemitah.